The Coroner's Daughter by Andrew Hughes, narrated by Jennifer Fitzgerald. For my 18th birthday, Father promised me the hand of a handsome young man, which he duly delivered mounted in a glass bell jar. The gift box had been waiting for me in the parlour, neatly tied with a single black ribbon. Firelight danced along the curve of the glass as I held it up. The bones, blackened at their joints, were closed over in a loose grip. The index finger and thumb curled upwards, like a figure pointing in some old Italian painting. Father said, "Can you believe they were going to throw that away from the storage room in York Street?" I tilted the jar so the forefinger moved ever so slightly, as if it wanted a tap against the glass. "How old is it?" "No one was sure, though I seem to remember it being there when I was a student."
"I thought you said that he was young and handsome."
"Ah, well, I can tell these things."
I glanced at him. "Is that so?"
"It's the ratio of the distal and middle phalanges," he said, flexing his own fingers. "A dead certainty."
I spent the morning finding it a home. Mrs. Perrin wouldn't allow it in the parlour, and the bookcases in the study were full. So I placed the jar on a shelf in my bedroom, nudging it between framed portraits of John Hunter and Edward Jenner. Both had been frontispiece etchings, which I'd removed with the aid of a ruler and one of Father's scalpels. On my desk, a raven's quill lay across an unsigned letter. I'd meant to show that to Father earlier, so I fetched my shawl, hoping to catch him before he became ensconced in his work. I glanced out of my window. Frost still lingered on the lawn, and his footprints were visible leading to the mews at the bottom of the garden. We called it Father's little charnel house, but from the outside it looked quite cheery, almost a house in its own right, with grey slates and red bricks and ivy crowding the sash windows. The stables took up the ground floor. Newton and Boy lifted their heads above the half doors as I passed by the carriage and the cadaver cart. The rooms upstairs had once been home for the coachman and his family, and even now, whenever a new case arrived, Father liked to direct the pallbearers up to the living quarters. Its front office was sparse, just a few desks and shuttered cabinets, and a long work table in the middle of the room. Ewan was there, seated in the corner and writing in a ledger, his pen stilled. We both waited for the other to speak, then began to greet each other at once, then stopped and fell silent. I said, "I was just looking..."
"He is in the dissecting room."
"Oh."
The only room that I was not allowed to enter. Ewan noticed the letter in my hand.
"But I can deliver that to him if you wish."
"Do you mind if I wait instead?"
"No," he said, "not at all."
He seemed ready to find me a chair, but I hoisted myself up to sit on the edge of the examination table. Ewan cast his eyes over the work surface before returning his attention to the ledger. Father's assistant was a young man from the Scottish Lowlands who had come to Dublin to study medicine at Trinity. His second year would begin in the autumn, but for several months he had worked alongside Father for practical experience. Ewan was tall, a few inches taller than me, with slim fingers, a thicket of chestnut hair, and eyes with a downward, wistful slant. He would often work late into the evening, and from my room I'd see candlelight flickering in the windows at the foot of the garden.